Hi, this is the 808 Podcast, and I'm Jeff Barr. Today I'm interviewing Andrew and Dan of Skinny Price as part of the Intel Startup Spotlight. We're sitting in the basement of the AWS loft in San Francisco. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Give me a sense of why you decided to form Skinny Price.
So it was basically a fundamental issue I've always had is, you know, why is it that everyone has to pay the same price? Why is it we couldn't pay different prices depending on, you know, your need? You know, obviously some people are way more price sensitive than others. And I've been always constantly thinking about this through school and then after school. And, you know, I was in sales and I actually literally see people would actually pay different prices depending on how much they wanted to haggle. And I came on this theory of, you know, it all comes down to time. Everyone's time is worth something. And then there was an aha moment when I was watching my my fiance. We'd watch TV shows and every time a commercial would come on, she'd pop open the laptop. And then she would start window shopping online, adding stuff to the shopping cart, but not actually buying anything. Then the commercial would end, she'd shut it, and then she'd go back to watching the show. And after seeing this night after night, and I'm laughing, here's two giant industries. You have the advertising industry getting no money from my fiance, and then the e-commerce industry extracting no value because she actually wasn't buying anything. And at that moment I said, you know, maybe here's, you know, something we could do. If I showed you a commercial, and then in exchange for watching that commercial, we gave you a variable discount, would that motivate you to buy? And she said, ooh, interesting, kind of a, you know, gamifying that experience. And then I said, but you can do this as many times as you want. So it really just depends on how much time you want to spend. And that's really when it kind of kicked off and started this adventure.
Ah, okay. Now, did you also have a similar moment or did you get roped into this later?
I got roped into it later, yeah. So no, it was definitely...
A little bit, you know, so I had started the company in Boston, got into an accelerator program called Mass Challenge. Mass Challenge was great. We, you know, beat out a couple hundred other companies to get in and had some great advisors like Jeff Taylor from Monster and Scott Case, his ex-co-founder of Priceline. And, you know, all these people said the same thing, which is, if you really want a shot at this, you got to move out to Silicon Valley. So moved out here about 3 years ago, became really good friends with Andrew, and he was working on his own startup. And then there was a time where, you know, I was just like, you know, I really need help. You know, I need stuff more on the technical side. Can you come in? And you just started helping out, and then it was just a perfect fit.
Okay, so was this your first entrepreneurial adventure?
I would say in the software side, high tech. Before this, in another lifetime ago, I actually owned a construction company. So I had done that to pay for school, and I was a management information systems. And then when I graduated, you know, I was making, you know, I think $50,000 in IT, and it was half of what I was making when I ran the construction company. So I went back to doing the construction company, and then that actually got acquired by Home Depot. And then I still had always this itch to do, you know, something on the software side, and then jumped into this.
Okay, so tell me a bit more about the concept. So you're watching TV, you see something, the ad pops up. How does it all
connect together? Basically, we have we would call this a variable discount technology that can be applied to a couple different facets. We have two patents around this, and we have a third one pending. The variable discount technology, you know, originally was going after e-commerce companies. So an e-commerce company could add a button right below the add to cart button called get discount or whatever they would like to call it. This is what one of our large e-commerce partners, Heels.com, first started. So they put a button called get discount. So if you wanted to pay full price, you could hit add to cart, which was very surprising. There's a lot of people who are not price sensitive and do that. Then there's a button that says get discount. You click the get discount button, you watch a 15-second video ad in exchange for watching that ad. We give you a variable discount. So it could be 5% off, all the way up to whatever the max they want to set. In this case, they went up to 50% off. Now, if you don't like, you have 60 seconds when they give that discount. So maybe it's like the first time 10% off. And you say, yeah, I have 60 seconds to set if I want to buy or try again. So you try again, you watch another commercial. In exchange for watching that commercial, now all of a sudden you get 20% off. And then you watch another commercial, and it could be 29% off. And it bounces all around just like a slot machine. So in essence, a person's time is what separates out their price sensitivity. So we have some users who click it once, whatever the discount is, they buy, all the way up to you people who watch for hours until they hit one of the really higher discounts.
Oh, so yeah. There, it's not necessarily a progressive discount.
It's a slot machine. It's completely variable. We have a trade secret pricing algorithm that is computing all this. And that goes into the supply demand that we can adjust on demand.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it's not just a person's price sensitivity overall. It's also for that given product. So we can learn a lot about the different individuals and where, you know, what's driving that price sensitivity to help adjust pricing and how much we should be able to do.
The commercials that they watch, are they necessarily related to the product that they were
talking about? Right now we're just using, you know, LiveRail, which we got bought by Facebook. We're just putting in TV commercials. So we just needed something that was going to make them value their time. So these are like Coca-Cola commercials, Doritos, stuff you'd see on TV. So But now that we've actually proven that this works in, you know, large e-commerce, we then said, how else could we use this? And some of our larger, we're now dealing with some multi-billion dollar companies that want to roll out actual email campaign. So you'd have an email campaign go out and it would say the largest discount, because now they can offer a larger discount. So instead of they always offer 20%, 20%, well, with us, you could do up to 50% off and, you know, spin and save or, you know, variable discount. They click that, goes to a landing page, and they go through our system, and then they would get a promo code. So,
and with the bigger discount that you throw out there, helps on conversions, so you can help increase conversions while not giving away more margin necessarily, right? Because they're in control of where they want to be able to set that discount.
Yeah. And you're going to get a lot higher click-through because of the higher discount. Mm-hmm. So then another option that we've been testing is using it as an ad unit. So you'd have a large partner that would basically already be doing advertising all over the web, and they're doing up, you know, 20%, use this promo code. Well, now it's a save up to 50%, spin and save, or, you know, variable discount, try now. And then they would be able to click that ad unit and obviously then do the variable discount.
So, interesting. So yep. What has been the response from potential customers so far?
So the customers that we surveyed actually use it, love it, and, you know, it's funny, they're like almost embarrassed sometimes how much time they spend doing this, but it's very addictive. You know, you see people coming back over and over again to try to get that better discount. So we're gamifying the window shopping experience. And then on the e-commerce side, this does some pretty interesting things for them in the sense that we're able to kind of figure out that, you know, price elasticity demand curve on the fly and find out what is the exact price of, you know, what discount on average should we be giving away that motivates the most amount of profit. Because you could obviously give away the farm and have a ton of volume, but you're not making much money on each one. Or you could sell really high price stuff, but not have enough volume. Well, we're finding that perfect happy medium. So
this turns into some kind of a big data generator. It sounds like that you're collecting tons and tons of information about consumer behavior, and you can index it and analyze it lots and lots of different ways.
Exactly. So, and it's, you know, obviously very exciting for the big, you know, the multi-billion dollar partners. Obviously, are very price sensitive in the sense of competition, right? So right now, every competitor is using bots to crawl each other's websites. They have a price that's fixed out there, right? As soon as they adjust it, Amazon adjusts their price, someone else adjusts their price, you know, and it's basically race to bottom pricing. Well, the nice thing about variable discounting is all the price that you're seeing, or at least for the bots, is static. And then we're generating a variable discount. So you have the competitors have no idea what price you're actually showing to customers or what price they're buying.
And the bots haven't learned to actually watch the commercials yet?
No, because we have a verification question that proves if you're human. Okay. So you have to identify a shape that appears over the video. Really simple for human, pretty hard for a bot.
What has been the response from retailers so far when you show this to them?
So obviously very positive. The fact that we went from a $10 million e-tailer to now, you know, multi-billion dollar e-tailers that want to implement it is obviously signs that are really, really good. So we're really excited about that. And then, you know, we're working on this SaaS model, which is obviously licensing the technology. But we also decided, you know, this is such an opportunity to go after a huge market, which is the $6 trillion market of local businesses. And we decided we're going to launch our own version of this for restaurants and bars. And the idea is that you'd be able to get a variable discount on going out to eat. And we just launched this down in San Jose, and we're getting great data. And we're about to turn on a new facet. We do our first test Friday. But next week, it will be basically for promo cards. So instead of getting a coupon for the restaurant, you'd actually get a promo card. So you buy it up front. Once again, it's a variable discount on that promo card. So it could be a $50 promo card, but you're buying it for $25.
Okay. Let's say I'm a large e-commerce site, and I would like to integrate with Skinny Price. What kind of connections do I need to make between my systems and your systems, and how does all the information fit together?
Yeah. Would you want to talk to this?
So sorry, can you ask that question again?
Let's say I am the e-commerce retailer, and I look at this, say, this sounds really awesome, I'd love to plug it all together. What do I actually have to do?
I guess it depends on how they want to set it up, right? Because we can do anything from doing an email blast to putting a button on the website to even doing an ad unit where, you know, we're running an ad unit where you can see up to 40% off and you're looking at CNET for, computers or something of that nature, and we could show you an ad that you go and click on there. So I guess it really depends, right? If we're doing a button on the website, we really need to be linked into their API to be able to help generate coupon codes, because ultimately a lot of this stuff is done through generating a promo code that they can use on that website. So in some cases we've done that, so it's so integrated that it's seamless to the end user that they don't even notice that there's a promo code. All that stuff gets hidden. Once they click through that experience, they're just brought back to the cart with the discount already for that given product and can go and check out.
And so that's really their incentive to make that purchase right away and not to just leave it in the cart Yeah, definitely.
You got it. But in the case of an email blast or things like that, then we can do that in a much simpler manner. They could even just give us a list of promo codes up in advance, right, that we single-use promo codes that we load into our system. We take them directly to our landing page where they go through that process, and then they're given that coupon code where they can go and use that at a later time to at the website for checkout. Yeah,
and it's funny because, you know, now that we've worked with, you know, large e-commerce companies, we realize how slow they move, and, you know, their large IT systems and the bureaucracy of it. So we found, you know, let's make this as simple as possible. Let's run an A/B test. You already run an email campaign. Let's go. You run your standard 20% off. Let's do ours up to 40% off. Just give us a bunch of promo codes. It's that simple. Your IT doesn't have to do anything. And we can run an A/B test. We can prove the technology works. And then we can take the next steps of doing the further integration.
And is that usually pretty effective?
And that's pretty effective.
For selling?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So that's the way to go.
Okay. Tell me how AWS fits into all this.
Well, all over the place, I guess. You know, primarily, we've been using EC2, S3, and ElastiCache as well. Those have been our primary sources. I mean, obviously, with the different models that we have, we kind of have things set up differently, right? So we've got the local model, which is a, you know, standalone application that we actually have running through Heroku, so I guess indirectly using AWS. But from a widget perspective, when we're running on an e-commerce website, we've set that up through EC2 to make sure that, you know, we're as dialed in as possible for a much larger volume of customers coming.
So you basically have to make sure that you're scaled to whatever the volume is of the target size.
You got it. Got it.
And that's the thing is that, you know, they might write an email campaign and we'll need, you know, 3 million emails are going to be going out and we need to be able to scale up for that volume. And then after the weekend, there's no volume. So, you know, it's nice to be able to scale up and scale down for that type.
Start using like auto-scaling, elastic load balancing and things like that?
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. You run in a single region or across multiple regions?
Single region right now.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So you said EC2, S3, any database at all?
Well, we played around a little bit with DynamoDB. We're using Mongo currently, so we thought about potentially making that shift, especially kind of when we heard the early goings of what DynamoDB was going to be offering. But at this point, we've just been so heads down that we haven't really gone back to that well yet to see if it's if it's the right. Yeah. So it's not currently the right time maybe to make that transition, but we do have a lot of interest.
Yeah, and that's really the flexible aspect of AWS is the fact that you can pick and choose, and if you want to just treat everything as effectively generic Linux servers, you can do that. If you want to use higher level services, you can do it as well, or you can transition one way or the other.
Yeah, and I was super interested after going to the AWS conference learning about the machine learning, because obviously we're obviously big data side. And, you know, as soon as we have more and more data, the more I'd like to be able to use machine learning to figure out those exact points. That
I could see tons and tons of applications for that, and, you know, maybe even dropping some of this data into Redshift and doing analytics on that.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, we're already to the point where I think we need to make that transition over to Redshift. It's really difficult to try and manage the amount of data that we're dealing with already. We're doing whatever we can to just solve today's problems, right? But ultimately,
keep the plane flying.
Yes, to keep the plane flying. But by all means, we know that we need to go probably in that direction with Redshift and start putting better analytics and things that will help us scale in the future and not have to scramble to pull a lot of this information together.
Sure. Now, when you're talking to potential retailers, do they know or care that you're running on AWS, or they just see you
they
as
actually
a service?
Yes. And as soon as we say AWS, they're like, okay. So. That also is
no
check.
Questions, no objections,
nope.
Like that?
Usually just a check mark. It's just, you know, what are you doing? This, check, check, check.
Great. Now, do you end up having to do things like virtual private cloud to connect into their own IT infrastructure?
Not yet. Yeah.
So you're a bit more isolated than that. Don't have to have that level of connectivity. Okay.
Yeah.
So give me a sense of kind of like low to high. Like you talked about scaling up massively for email blasts and so forth. Mm-hmm. Is it like factors of 10 or 100 or 1,000 that you need to scale?
So, you know, we'll just say heels because that was the latest things that we went through. You know, so you go from having almost no traffic to, you know, they're doing, you know, generally about 1 million uniques per month. So, and then they'll blast out. I think they have, I can't get into how many emails that they have. But, you know, it is obviously a big jump. So, you know, going from not much to high numbers in, you know, is exactly why.
Do they give you a heads up when this is going to happen, or it just...
It's a full communication, you know, and obviously...
Definitely dialed in on that piece.
Yeah, and we're testing you know, bees, machine guns, making sure everything, you know, works, and then going forward.
Okay, yeah. So you mentioned one piece of software. What other pieces of software are in your technology stack that let you do this?
So, you mean in the sense of application?
Well anything. Like bees with machine guns, I actually just used that in the presentation yesterday, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Other kinds of things that helped you to build your app?
So...
trying to think of the things that I love.
Even at the language level.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I would, you know, of all the various different tools that we use, and not necessarily even on the coding side, but one that that we love is InVision, using the InVision app for you know, for all the design side and being able to just make quick mock-ups and changes in that regard. I'm trying to think of what else.
Slack. You gotta
Slack is Slack is fantastic, and having everything be able to integrate and the whole team being able to be up to speed immediately and make quick changes on things.
What's interesting, at least on the coding side, we originally started off in PHP, and obviously as we built out the first version, the problem is that it was super slow, and it worked great for modeling and running at our testing, but when you started to plug it into a big e-commerce company, you realize at scale this thing just died. So we then moved over to Node.js, which obviously allows for low latency and speed. And even though you love Ruby, Node's been working out great.
Okay, excellent. And is all your dev team local here in San Francisco?
No, it's just us here. We have a team up in Canada and a team in Mexico.
Oh, so we have a front-end guy here, too.
Front-end, yeah. So,
we're
near shore.
You told me initially that you got the advice that said you had to be in Silicon Valley to succeed. So how's that actually worked out?
It's good. So, from Boston, I had only raised $100,000. Since moving out here, I raised another $525,000. So I would say
And that's how we met as well.
Oh, and that's how we also met. So
through a founder's peer mentorship group.
Yeah.
So that actually got me involved in Skinny Price in the earlier days, even before I officially came over and started working on Skinny Price. I was pretty familiar with a lot of the things that Dan was working on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's been the most awesome moment so far of being an entrepreneur?
So, I think the one for me at least was when we turned on our first partner, and people started pressing the button and they actually started using it. And using it a lot, and nothing broke. So it was real data, because it was, that was almost two years in the making, or 3 years in the making, before we actually went live with a big e-commerce partner. And then to have it not break, nothing break on the AWS side, and actually have people using it, and that was just so.
Now, does your fiance use it?
She did. Yes, okay, she has used it.
Awesome.
And she's always why can't you give me a better discount? Sorry. It is what it is.
That add to the shopping cart and kind of leave it there is a really interesting phenomenon. My wife does that all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you look at any of her shopping carts, there's thousands to tens of thousands of dollars worth of stuff in her shopping cart at any given time. And if she inadvertently pushed the buy button, we'd have a 40-foot truck pulling up in front of our house.
This behavior, a lot of people end up using the shopping cart as a wish list. And they're just adding it.
It's wish lists or bookmarks.
Yes, exactly. So, and one of the things that we've actually been able to start testing is the fact that there's this variable discount, right? But the reason we're able to offer this is because of, depending on what other people are buying or not buying, we increase or decrease, and it depends on the advertising revenue and all that stuff. So we really need to be able to time this out. So what we've been experimenting with is pop-up messages that will say this promo code is only good for the next 2 hours or next 1 hour. And it would be only timed out. So if they don't make the purchase, they'll lose it. So then you get that fear of loss, which obviously helps motivate the purchase.
Okay. Now, the retailers that you work with, do they ever get a say in the kind of ads they're being shown? Do you have to worry about channel conflict or make sure you don't show an ad that's for
the
competition?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. So there's a blacklist. They don't obviously want, any type of competitor ads or anything that's, tobacco, liquor, anything political, et cetera. And then we've also, once again, this really just comes down to making the person value their time. So we can add more value to the customer if it is something that's more relative. So if an e-commerce merchant has a lot more video, for example, they have examples of the product. Well, we could be showing them videos of other products for the 15 seconds. And now they're actually seeing other products, and then they're still valuing their time. We're working with, we got into the Dell Founder 50, which is, basically a cohort for very innovative companies. And we're trying to work with them. And, one thing would be is they have so many different product lines and lots of videos on all these products, we could just continuously show Dell videos.
Okay.
So, and obviously,
but then there's also this interesting tension where you don't want the ad to be so interesting that they actually forget why they were watching it in the first place to get the discount on whatever it was they were about
right.
to purchase.
Yes. So, I mean, there's a fine line.
Given that the web is so good at just creating, making us all ADD, right?
Right, and yeah. We'll stay away from showing cat videos.
Away we go and we're doing something different.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay. Any advice you might have for aspiring entrepreneurs, like what they should do, not do?
If you're getting into SaaS, just be ready for a long slog of a battle. I never realized how slow big companies move until, you know, we went into the SaaS model. And it's just, I mean, I had heard it, but I was just like, oh, I'm going to get this done in a few months. And, you know, like, you know, our first partnership took 7 months just to integrate. And it's not that technical. It's just the longer bureaucracy. So if you're going into SaaS, just be ready for a long cut. But if you're going consumer, you can iterate every day. It's great because you can literally test stuff and you're the boss, which is cool.
Excellent. How about from the technical side? Any advice to entrepreneurs?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Well, he's always like, don't worry about future problems until they come. So he's always like, solve for today's problems. So I'm always like, we need more scale, or we need this, or we got to start thinking about how we're going to get all these promo codes in the system. And he's like, don't worry about that yet. That's going to be coming down the road. Solve today's problems, and then worry about the future stuff.
Is there any like panic moments where you look at the meters and the gauges, and you're like, whoa, I didn't even know we could like do that much traffic or that many hits or requests? Or?
So for us, no, because we know what's going out, and it's all like being ready for that amount so that we were prepared for it. So for us, it's not as scary as, I think, a consumer app that gets blasted on the Wall Street Journal, and all of a sudden, you know, things go, you know, crazy. You know, we know ahead of time of, you know, what is the typical usage, how much should be ready for. So, but it would be nice to have that on the consumer side. So if our local model blows up, it
would
be great.
So where would you like to take this in like the coming months and years?
So the great thing about the local model is it's such a huge market. You know, $6 trillion market. We're just initially going after restaurants and bars because that's something that you do multiple times. You know, everyone has to eat, right? But you can expand into all these different verticals. And we have the capability to easily do that. So we could start going into all these other small businesses and then rolling this out nationwide. So we're really excited about the potential of the local. And, you know, the SaaS model is just fantastic because that can be a cash cow. You know, once you start licensing technology to such big players, you know, it's just continuously signing up new merchants.
Sure. Okay.
So, but the vision is that you'll never buy anything unless it's a variable discount. You know, why would you ever want to pay full price unless you're rich? So, and that's kind of what we're trying to do is marketize the pricing. You know, those who can afford to pay full price, great. All the way down to the poor college kid who can't afford, now they have a way to get that discount they really
need. And they've got a little bit of spare time to watch the ads.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, wish you all the luck in the world and appreciate you coming by to speak with me today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Jeff Barr. This has been the AWS Podcast, and you're listening to the Intel Startup Spotlight, and we're coming to you from the AWS Loft in San Francisco. Thanks for listening.